voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Weather this afternoon, sunny with a high near 89, east wind 5 to 7 miles per hour. Tonight, patchy fog after 4 a.m., otherwise increasing clouds with a low around 63. Southeast wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening. Tuesday, patchy fog before 10 a.m., otherwise mostly sunny with a high near 84. Northeast wind 3 to 6 miles per hour. Tuesday night, a slight chance of showers, partly cloudy with a low around 62. Light and variable wind. Chance of precipitation is 20%. Wednesday, a slight chance of showers, partly sunny with a high near 84. Light northeast wind. Chance of precipitation is 20%. Wednesday night, a slight chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a high with a low around 65. Chance of precipitation is 20%.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. And this is NAMI's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no paid staff, no office. We work out of our houses. We use our own phones, that sort of thing. And what we try to do is we try to help people who either have someone in their family or someone they know or someone they work with who has a mental health issue, or the person who has a mental health issue, try to get them the right course to take to go on with their life. We do this in many ways. We have classes. We have what they call a family-to-family class, which is a 12-week course, which the people taking it learn about medications, side effects, what to do, what not to do, what not to say in certain situations. And it also allows them to feel what it's like to be the person with the illness. We also have what they call a basics course. Basics is for families who have younger children, either from 4 years up to under 18. And it is a six or seven-week course, depending who's teaching it. And it's, like I said, for families who have young children. Because believe it or not, young children can have a mental health issue also. And we also run a support group, which is run the third Thursday of every month, and from 7 to 9. And that's held at 52 East Main Street in Flemington. And if you need anybody to call or about our programs or what we do or questions you may have, you can call 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. And we do not have someone man it 24/7, but we do have someone who checks it at least twice a day, and we promise you we will get back to you. Now, for the show. We are very privileged today to have with us Shay Dibley. Shay is a NAMI board member and someone with a mental health issue who has gone on with his life. Shay's married, has two children, and just recently opened up his own insurance office up in Washington, correct?
That's right.
Okay.
Right. Good afternoon.
So, Shay, we welcome you, and we're so glad to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, Larry. And I really actually started my insurance agency in Parsippany in 2014, but I've just opened my office, so that's a big step in the right direction. So.
Yeah, that's wonderful. You know, I hope all goes well with you.
Thank you. Yep, so far so good.
You know, we've known you since you've been well into your recovery and doing good. How was it prior to that?
Well, prior to that, I always say, you know, I'm at this turning point now. I'm 38 years old. When I was 19 years old, I had my first break. And so half my life has been free of mental illness, and half my life has been recovering from mental illness. And But it took me the better part of my 20s and early 30s to get to the stage where I was comfortable managing, coping, medication, holistic, you know, losing weight, watching.
You have lost weight. I can.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm happy to say that I have lost weight. Also, as per suggestion of my general practitioner, wanted me to cut down on on the carbohydrates because of the antipsychotic medication that I was taking could cause, you know, problems with diabetes and things like that.
Right.
So I'm happy to be where I am today, and I still have to conquer many challenges every single day. I just have a very strong rational mind in order to offset the errant thoughts that I have, delusions, things like that.
What is your diagnosis?
My diagnosis is schizoaffective disorder. So I have the portion of the mania and depression, as well as psychosis and delusions and paranoia. So,
when you first had your first incident, what was it? Did you, like my son, when he had his first, he attempted suicide, and hindsight's 20/20. So looking back, we could say, well, we should have picked it up here or here or here. But with three other kids who were older than him, it's teenage years, you know. They do these stupid things, you know. Mm-hmm. And looking back on my teenage years, God, I don't even want to remember what I did. My wife Priscilla won't even allow me to tell my kids what I did, you know.
Yeah.
And so,
definitely. And those adolescent years are certainly challenging anyway, with all the hormones that you're experiencing, the growing up, not knowing how to be an adult before you are an adult.
Right.
So many of these adjustments we make around adolescence that even if it doesn't happen to you in adolescence, they're, you know, with women, usually it's around the age 28 to 35 or when their first break happens. But I really do think that the ability to have that support, if I knew about NAMI when I was going through my initial hospitalizations and things like that, I never attempted any type of suicide, didn't really have any suicidal ideation. I called my mom when I was in college, when I was really going through my worst times, and I said, something's bad wrong with me, you need to come pick me up. And she drove 4.5 hours or four hours and came pick me up, and that was the start of the whole thing. But I really feel that although we have these challenges in life and we have these things that happen with mental health, the stigma was very real. First of all,
it still is.
Yeah. But so I knew about all of that. But soldiering through has been my motto, just kind of soldiering through. Not to say that I don't rest or I don't get the help I need, but I reach out when I do need help. But really, what my mantra has always been is my rational mind has been able to offset the symptoms of schizoaffective disorder in my day-to-day life. Hasn't been easy all the time, but you know, to this day I still have a lot of things to deal with and to try to, you know, stay on the path of leading a healthy life. And when I mean healthy life, healthy mind, healthy body, try to do it, you know, holistically a little bit. And I've really found a doctor that I can really count on, and his practice has been very much a boon for me, and my family support, my wife, her family, really is just understanding of the whole situation. So I can't say that I've done it alone. Of course, I've done a lot of things to point myself in the right direction, but I've had a lot of support throughout the time, and that's why these NAMI classes are so important for the family members and for the caretakers and for the those that care about the people with mental health issues. It's very it really speaks volumes of just how it takes a village really to kind of be vested in your mental wellness.
Right. And did your wife know you prior to your illness, or did you meet after?
We met after.
Okay.
Yep. But she's been
super supportive.
Very, very supportive. And she knew also when I went through my second real break, which was 4 years later, she was there by my side the entire time. And a little scary for her, actually, at that time, because we were just dating.
Of course.
And so I really give her a lot of credit as well, too. But also, she kind of knew what she was getting into when she married me, because she didn't think that everything... I didn't hide anything from her.
Right.
You know, and plus, right. She had been there with me, right by my side, during the time when I was going through this turbulent
mm-hmm.
period.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I've made mistakes, too. Just like everybody.
We all make mistakes,
yeah.
You know.
But certainly, you know, I feel that I'm able to thrive. And, you know, that's what I hope for many, many people, that they're able to thrive in spite of these mm-hmm. things. And some things I know that I can't do as well as my wife or anybody else, because schizophrenia is a disorganized thought disorder. So when I need to really organize something or get something done or figure out what the next step is, sometimes I need a little bit of help with that because of just the disorganization of the thoughts, you know.
What about, did you have any symptoms of mania also, or?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I've had symptoms of mania. In fact, mm-hmm. for weeks at a time, I can barely get much sleep and function at a high level. And then, you know, then it'll turn and I'll be much more, you know, laying on the couch
right.
and trying to recover. But I've found that one thing that's really helped me is my general practitioner, as I said, told me to lose weight and watch my carbs. One thing I found was when I started eating healthier and started putting that applied, you know, at the exercise and just trying to be overall more well, it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. That when you start acting in a more healthy manner overall,
mm-hmm.
that you sort of feel better just overall, mentally, physically, and just more clear head and resolute determination to do that. I know it's not easy. I struggled with weight for a long time, but I really think that it's something that kind of, if you can become a partner with your doctor and he's not, or he or she is not just asking you, oh, how do you feel when you take this medication, or what symptoms do you have, and here's more medication, when you can feel...
You're talking about a psychiatrist?
Psychiatrist,
yeah. Okay.
Who at this point I see once every 6 months for like 15 minutes.
Okay.
So it's just really medication management, but he weighs me when I go there. He says, you know, how much you smoke cigarettes, so how many cigarettes are you smoking, things of those nature to help all around, just not just with...
And is this what you mean by becoming a team with your doctor?
Yes. Yeah.
But you said something about going to see a general practitioner too. And
right.
So how often do you see the general practitioner?
General practitioner, I'll get my physical, not once a year, but maybe once every 18 months or so.
Oh,
I'll just get I'll have a general physical. And actually, I haven't seen my general practitioner in a while. I just have a family doctor.
They
do family medicine. So they see my kids and my mm-hmm. wife and everything
right.
like that.
Right.
So,
and a full or modified functional recovery is possible. How does one go about doing it?
Well, I can't say exactly what the recipe for success is in every case.
No, of course not. I understand that. But what is it about in your case?
In my case, I think that I've stayed away from you know, becoming a walking pharmacy. In other words, just...
Right.
With medication, you can become a walking pharmacy sometimes, too. You just don't know where you're at until you establish a baseline.
Mm.
And then, of course, a lot of what happens is staying away from the external, you know, stressors, and as well as substances like street drugs and alcohol can certainly play a bad case. It can make a bad case worse.
Mm-hmm.
Because then what you're doing is, on top of the medication, whether you're taking it or not, then you're self-medicating, and you get to a point where you just hit a wall because they aren't designed to help your situation temporarily, maybe at the actual
right.
point, but you're actually moving further away from your goal because you're just adding insult to injury at that point. So I've been able to stay away from street drugs and alcohol for the most part. Now I can enjoy a beer once in a while, but I really stay away from it because I'm already on the medication, and I think that I should just really just stick to my treatment plan with my doctor,
right?
As well as
right.
I make notes. All throughout, I have just an iPad, and I just type in notes for my doctor. I date it. put in 3 or 4 sentences how I'm feeling, then I just go over it with my doctor. So it's one of the things you don't remember sometimes is to bring up are the things that happened in the past, right, however long. But when it's actually happening, if you make a note of it and then go bring it to your doctor, you know, it's sort of like a journal that you can fall back on and say, well, no, everything isn't, well, everything's okay right now, maybe, but this is what happened a week ago. You know, this is how how I was feeling, how what I was thinking, you know.
Right. Doesn't the person have to have the desire to want to get better? Because without the desire and the willpower, it's almost impossible. It's almost futile.
I think that's a big part of the unfortunate thing about being mentally ill is that sometimes people don't have the insight into their own disorder. And they are in denial, pushing people away, not thinking that they are normal and everyone else is part of the problem instead of, you know, working on themselves. So I think that's just something that came naturally to me. So I don't really know how to improve that in other people. It's you can't convince them as much as you just need to sort of be kind, act in a kind manner, and sort of break down that barrier. And let them know they're not alone. They're not alone.
Right.
There's 1 in 5 people affected by mental health issues in this country, which means if the average family is 4 people, that means nearly everyone has somebody in their family that's directly affected by mental illness. And then what about all the other people around them? Mm-hmm. You know, they act as either caretakers or they play some part in it somehow.
Right. Right.
So you always had the insight, you're saying, right from the beginning. You never were in denial or fought it, or okay,
right. Well, that's not to say you know, the doctors didn't know what it was at first. So my diagnosis changed a few times until I started seeing the practicing doctor psychiatrist that I see now.
Okay, because a lot of people don't really understand what schizoaffective means.
Well, you know, I'm not going to sit here and explain exactly what it means because I'm not a doctor, but to me it means that you have an affective portion, which is like a bipolar type symptoms, mania and depression, as well as the schizophrenia portion with the paranoia, the delusions, the hallucinations, sort of a mixture on the spectrum, one side being schizophrenia, the other side being major depression, sort of a spectrum like we talk about in autism.
Right.
So,
and isn't it true that many times, if not in all times, the person in recovery needs others' help? It's like, I know some who have done it on their own, but they're very few. Most of the people I know over the last 20 years doing this, that they've had somebody or an organization or some help that they just couldn't do it by themselves.
Definitely. I agree with that. I've always enlisted the help of others. I think it's interesting, and I don't want to speak in general terms about this portion of it, but in jail, if you're in jail, you're in with a lot of bad people, but the worst thing they can do to you is put you in solitary confinement. Shows how much we need one another. We really do. Sure. At our central core, we need one another. There's very few people who have the willpower and the strength to get everything done on their own. It's just almost, it would be insurmountable a task for me.
I can understand that. And, you know, the other problem with organizations that are around to try to help people is if a person has a dual diagnosis, mental health issues or alcohol or drugs, they're in a conflict as to what to try to cure first. Now, some organizations address both at the same time. Some organizations address the addiction part, whether it's alcohol or drugs. Others focus on the mental issue part first. I don't know what's right. I'm not a doctor or, you know, a psychologist or anything like that. But it seems to me that you have to address both because one is just as bad as the other.
That's true. Plus, there can be dual diagnoses sometimes with developmental issues such as autism,
right.
or Asperger's, and some mental illness problems. There's definitely all those, a lot of concurrent things going on. What I will say with addiction, I know quite a few people who struggle with addiction, not so much the mental health portion and the addiction, but what I can say is that small steps,
mm-hmm.
just like with anything you want to accomplish in
that's
life.
What they tell you in Al-Anon.
I mean, it really is small steps. It's celebrating the small wins. You know, within, you know, you've been sober for a week, celebrate that. Not celebrate how we would celebrate, you know,
right.
but, you know,
no, I understand
celebrate being sober. And then as you're conquering that portion of it, maybe add the little bit of the psychiatry, you know,
mm-hmm.
to it,
mm-hmm.
get to
right.
a psychiatrist
right.
and get on some base form of antipsychotic or depression type medication.
Right. And I know that people have told me that a lot of times when they wanted to ask for help, it was just overwhelming to them. And they just couldn't bring themselves to do it. And until they crashed and then wound up in a hospital for a period of time and then, you know. But prior to that, it was like just overwhelming to them.
Mm-hmm.
They felt like they were a failure to ask for help. Was that? Yeah.
What was it? I'm sorry.
They felt like maybe they were a failure. Is that why they wouldn't ask for help? Do you think?
It could be. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know exactly, but mm-hmm. I know that a lot of them have had a crash and wound up in a hospital. Mm-hmm. Before
then
they
revolving
then
door,
there they were just, you know,
the revolving door bounce
right.
back and forth.
Yeah. Bounce back and forth,
it.
Right.
One of the things that I think is it's not pride, really. It's not pride that holds us back. It's that we think nobody could understand what we're going through. We think it's very individualized. These are my thoughts. This is something happening to me and nobody else. Or you're the exact opposite. I know, let's say, there's nothing wrong with me. There is something wrong with
everybody else in the world.
Everybody else mm-hmm. in the world. So there's these barriers, and I think it starts with the stigma associated with
absolutely. With I think so too. I think you're right.
I think it's very hard to go up to somebody and sure. say, I'm having these suicidal thoughts or I really need help, other than in certain venues. You know, when you're walking into a hospital, you've already made that step to go to the hospital. Not
well, you did something and you're being transferred
being
to the
transferred
hospital.
To the hospital, or
right.
you had a psychotic break along with these substance abuse issues, or something along those
right.
lines. So, you know, the worst thing that I think is that there's so many people that need mental health guidance and help in jails. And I think that's one of the biggest problems with our system is that so many people with mental health issues are being not treated and not really treated
right.
in jail. And then they're in the revolving door again if they had a substance abuse issue or a violence issue. What I would say is people aren't more violent because they have mental illness. Some people are violent, some people aren't violent, and then there's mental health issues that either exacerbate or
there's more people in jail with mental health issues than there are in hospitals
mm-hmm.
throughout the country.
Right.
And that says something for our system. It doesn't say a lot for it, but it says something about it,
mm-hmm.
that it's got to be improved.
Yeah.
You know, it just has to be. Because if you're locking somebody up for, say, I'm not talking about murder or something like that, some nonviolent or
non-violent.
Crime, right. and you're putting them in jail, and they're not getting meds, they're not getting help, they're not getting, you know, thing, that's only going to create more problems. So when they get out, it's going to be a revolving door. Like you said, it's going to be back in again and do it again. And
Some counties such as Union, NAMI works with CIT and the
mm-hmm.
officers,
yep.
and they have a jail
right.
diversion program.
Right.
We don't have
right.
a jail diversion program. We hardly even have a jail here.
We don't have a jail anymore.
Jail.
It's up in Somerset County.
But
I tell you one thing, our district attorney is very good about individualizing each case.
Right. Right.
For someone who has a mental health issue rather than...
And for those not nonviolent offenders to get an opportunity to work on themselves and to be in a more of a therapeutic situation, although it has to be punitive.
Right.
But a punitive therapeutic situation rather than thrown into jail is a big step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. It is. And, you know... When someone has to ask for help, sometimes that requires self-reflection, mm-hmm. also known as insight. Can that be learned?
I think it can be honed. I don't know if it can be completely learned if the person isn't willing to adjust their thinking. But I think it can be honed to a certain point. I think we all have an element of self-reflection in us. Looking in the mirror, sort of, even though we're not looking in the mirror all the time, just thinking about what somebody else sees about us, and sort of having that mindset to self-reflect. Not as you know, a lot of people don't do that hardly at all. But I think there is an element in everybody, nearly everybody, that has that little section of self-reflection. Mm-hmm. Maybe that wasn't the best thing to do. Maybe I should do it this way next time. Maybe I can ask for help, and maybe that's how I can get out of this situation. So I would say it can be honed in nearly everybody, that sort of like a skill, like a coping mechanism, right. Something that you can sort of work on instead of just, you know, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. That's the definition of insanity. And,
right.
And we're not talking about this type of insanity. We're talking just in general.
Right.
You know.
Now, going back a couple minutes here, when we're talking about recovery and a person needs help, are we speaking about organizations like Easter Seals, Catholic Charities, et cetera?
Definitely. And I think even just your local ministry or if you know, whatever denomination you are.
Yeah, I know. I understand
somebody
what you're saying.
Somebody that's a clergy or a clergy, some along those lines can help you sort of guide you in the right position. So into a position where you can get some help, get some help with the various things that are going on in your life. But you need to make that first step.
It's kind of funny, I don't say funny, but lack of better words. We've had ministers, preachers, take the family-to-family class. And from local churches around here in Huntington County. And a lot of times, I'll get phone calls from someone who spoke to their minister, and the minister's recommended they call us. And I've gotten calls from ministers. My own Reverend has referred people to me. And it's because they're not as versed or well-versed as we think they should be, but they're not, because there's so many other things that they have to focus on.
Right.
So my minister would refer them to me over the, I would say 3 or 4 times over the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. And, I can talk to them, and they took the family-to-family course, the people that you recommended, and it's helped them, and, you know, yada, yada.
Right.
But it's just amazing to me that all this help out there, and it's still not enough.
Right, yeah.
And we sit here and, you know, it's a shame because...
But we look where we've come from, though, Larry. You know, historically speaking, those with a diagnosis such as schizophrenia were literally just considered a leper's leper. Someone that was not even a leper would come near somebody with going through these issues that are visible in the community. And so what we tend to forget is that we're moving in the right direction. We have a lot of these support things. We have a lot of new medications coming out. We have a lot of treatments coming out. Although there's no cure for any of this at this point, I think one of the things to remember is that 50 years ago, when our grandparents, you know, were going, had people that they knew that were going through this, versus the last 10 years, or, you know, it's come a long way since then. You know, and I think that we're moving in the right direction. We're trying to squash stigma. We're trying to get people, and they've deinstitutionalized a lot of folks as well. So, you know, whether you agree with that or not, it's happened, and it's the person's right to live among everyone else with a mental health issue. But I see. You know, even at my office, I see people walking by, and sometimes they stop and speak with me, and they're visibly they have, when you start to talk to them, some major, mental health issues. Yeah. And I don't know what diagnosis they would be, but basically I'm trying to always look to, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. Right. So, but that's with everything. Just like with my customers, if there was someone that wasn't paying their bill, I reminded them twice, and their policy canceled, then you can't make them pay their policy either. It's the same kind
right.
of thing. You
no,
know,
I agree
if they don't have
you.
The money, they can't pay the policy. If the person is not willing to reach out for help or to take your suggestion of a referral to another organization or to a psychiatrist or to something like that, then that's, you know, unfortunately not something that we can necessarily force onto somebody, obviously, unless they're doing something that's criminal or,
Right.
I want to go back to a point you mentioned before about CTI. Is it CTI or CIT?
CIT.
Crisis
Intervention Team.
Crisis Intervention. Being trained in Union County. Now, I know there's an increasing number in Hunterdon County where we are. Is that moving along in that direction? And do you think there might be a way to get some of the police interested in taking the family-to-family course?
The CIT, Crisis Intervention Training, was at the Stamler Police Academy, so that it was mainly for police officers to take what to do in the case of a mental health crisis, when they see someone's going through a mental health crisis. I was there as more of a member of the community, a member of NAMI, and it's a 5-day course, Monday through Friday, and it's very, very good. It's a very well-run course. You'll meet a lot of officers, and the officers all have their misconceptions, but they also need to make sure to keep the officer safe as well. You know, so they're learning to help people more. And to understand really the underlying reasons for different things when there is a mental health crisis that they respond to, so that they don't take the inappropriate action.
Are more officers in our county being trained as we speak? Is that an ongoing escalation of training?
Well, the problem with our county is, like, for example, Linden, all right? They got more police officers on the Linden Police Force than we have in the entire county.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So consequently, if you're going to take 3 or 4 officers and have them do a week of training and pay them, you have to have people to replace them. Linden does, Patterson does, Trenton does. Hunterdon County doesn't in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of the officers in Hunterdon County, well, I won't say a lot, a good percentage of them have been trained. Have gone through it, but they go through it one at a time. And a lot of times they'll do the 8-to-5 class and then have to go do 7-to-3 in the morning shift, which larger police forces don't. I took the CIT training as a parent.
Yeah.
And I had, after the last class, a handful of police officers came up to me from different departments, and they said, "We're very glad that you're here because it gave us a parent's outlook on situations." And because I had said to them, I says, you know, during the class, I says, nobody wants a police officer hurt. but I don't want my child hurt either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I witnessed in Hunterdon County, I got called with someone from the hospital, from the crisis intervention team, and we went to a house, and three police officers were there. One I happen to know from the gym I go to, but they, a young man who's probably 6'3 and good 290 pounds, was locked in his bedroom and wouldn't come out. And they talked to that man through the door for 45 minutes. And finally the sergeant came down and said, we have to do something, you know. So they went, they got the key to from the parents, and they opened the door, and they says, we'll promise we won't hurt them. They took him down, but they took him down on the bed rather than the floor. And they did have to cuff him, but then they took him down on a stretcher, and that was kind of tough because the staircase was circular, and you know. But they took him to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And how long ago would it have been where they sat there for 45 minutes and talked to somebody through a door without kicking the door down and arresting them?
That wouldn't have happened.
It wouldn't have happened.
And the situation would have escalated.
Sure, and, absolutely.
And would have ended up either with the person having the crisis, you know.
Hurt or the hurt, cop hurt or something. Hurt. Right.
Yeah. And yeah. Charged with something.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And he wasn't charged. They just brought him to the hospital.
Right.
And, you know, so there is some improvement, you know. I know that if they can't take the entire five-week course, there's that mental health first aid thing that Alicia teaches.
Mm-hmm. Alicia Stevenson is a big part of our
yeah,
group.
Yeah, she's teaching that, so that mm-hmm. helps some
what
of the officers
family
take that.
To family? Could they take that at night once a
well,
week?
Well, the whole purpose of the family to family is if you have a relative or someone you know, or someone you
someone who's in your family.
You mentioned
someone,
that ministers were going to that, so I just
yeah. But some of the ministers that went had
okay.
people mm-hmm. that they mm-hmm. in their family. Mm-hmm. So, Shay, you've helped others while you're in recovery. Would you speak to how you've helped people break the revolving door with the mental health issues, health coverage, and the gaps that are in it?
Yes, definitely. It's a long process, and it's there's probably not enough time on this segment to go through everything, so I'll just keep it short. The way I've sort of guided people in the right direction, again, small steps, getting them sort of diverted from what their current situation is. If they're ping pong balling around, it's a matter of just guiding them to another way to then be helped. So you know, we just in this country only 7-8 years ago achieved what's called parity, and what parity means is parity in mental health as well as what might physically ail you, parity in mental health, so that the healthcare cannot deny some claims just because they're mental health related. So that's gone through, but now of course everything is changing again.
Sure.
So we're
fee for service.
Yeah, we're going to have new rules. And one of the problems is that I always hear from professionals, you know, psychiatrists, mm-hmm. when we go to HBH advisory
right.
board, is that it's just simply the hospitals, the organizations don't find it profitable to do all these services. So it's kind of hard to attract good talent to the area of mental health because it's almost like a lost leader in a lot of ways. So they have to see where best the resources are used that they have in the budget to work with. Whereas my doctor, I've referred a lot of people to, he charges a great deal of money per hour that, you know, he sees somebody, but he almost approaches things just totally from a, not like a set like mold standpoint. So that's why I think he's helped a lot of people that I know. But he does work. He works in like the Summit area. So that area does have, you know, the resources to pay. But he's worked outside of the mental in the mental health area for such a long time as the head of psychiatry for the Overlook Hospital and things of that nature. But I think it's a matter of finding a doctor that sort of listens to you, but then suggests and really acts as that consultative doctor to you. Just the little steps in the right direction sometimes make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
If you can just try to, if you're ping-ponging around, going back to your original question, if you just have somebody that can intervene at that time when you're sort of in transition and sort of maybe just suggest it instead of if you're going to Easter Seals and you're going to what's it called, Bridgeway,
right.
You know, Bridgeway and just, you know, sort of getting people back on their feet. For instance, there's a woman that I know that has bipolar, and just seeing her get her back on her feet. Her husband has epilepsy too.
Mm-hmm.
So they're both kind of just in this situation now where he said he's just starting to go back to work and she's just starting to go back to work after all a long time, maybe 12, 14 months out of work. And that's tough on people when they can't work, when they can't provide for their family because they have two kids as well.
Right.
So it's, you know,
and my son has epilepsy along with the mental illness, so I can appreciate that,
right,
too.
Right.
You know.
And the husband was saying, well, I've been, you know, 8 months without a seizure now. So, you know, I've been cleared by the doctor to work this job, and it was a pretty good job. You know, it's $20 an hour job, something. And I was proud of him. I was like, go, you know, just make sure you stay on your medication. Because a lot of times people, they get off their medication and they wonder why they're in sort of almost a crisis. And it's you know, yeah, you need to...
Well, they feel good. They don't have to take the medication.
Well, there's a reason you're feeling good.
Yeah, right, exactly. So. But they don't think about that.
Right,
you know.
It's right.
It's kind of the catch-22.
Right.
Yeah. But, and unfortunately, with fees for service coming up, mm-hmm, and in some areas already came up, a lot of these organizations are cutting back on what they do.
Yeah.
I know for a fact Easter Seals is cutting back their housing.
Mm-hmm.
They're selling it or closing them or whatever. And that's one of the worst things. Well, that and transportation are the two of the biggest issues we have in Hunterdon County.
Mm-hmm.
Is housing.
Yep.
Because technically it's supposed to be one of the richest counties in the country. And
for areas like Tewksbury and...
Well,
others.
Hunterdon County is supposed to be one of the richest counties in the country. And I wonder what I'm doing here. But
the problem has been, too, with Hunterdon County is a lot of the people go all the way to the city to work, and then they come back and they live in Hunterdon County. So that's part of the reason why there's quite a bit of money in the area. But Hunterdon has always been up there with Somerset County as one of the richest counties in the nation. And it's true that we're also one, Hunterdon County is also one of the healthiest counties in the nation. But the thing is that just because you say that doesn't mean there's a lot of people, or aren't a lot of people that are still suffering.
Right.
And maybe not as in great numbers, such as mm-hmm. like a Southern Union County where Linden and right. all those places are. But certainly there's a need for organizations such as NAMI and Easter Seals and Bridgeway.
It's just that they can't afford, because they're cutting back the grants and stuff to them, so they can't afford to keep running the housing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the biggest things that people need who have a mental health issue, is to find housing.
Right.
And, you know, it's like a catch-22.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. You know, it's just, it's sad, but... Okay, Shay, in the last few minutes we've got a few more minutes yet. You believe that all of us can assist in becoming holistically well by doing small, meaningful changes?
I guess that's my mantra today.
Instead of life-changing ones to attain peak mental and physical health.
I think it's hard to any time just to, you know, tell yourself, all right, Monday I'm on a diet, so I'm not going to eat unhealthily on Monday, starting on Monday. And then I'm also going to quit smoking, too, on Monday. So many of us expect these huge changes in our lives. What I mean by holistically well is that sometimes you just need to look at the whole picture. What are you eating? What are you drinking for beverages? What are you putting in your body? Can you make a meaningful small change? As if you're putting 3 sugars in your coffee, put 2 sugars in your coffee. That's not a horrible change to do on a weekly basis. Every 2-3 weeks, cut down a little bit on the sugar, on the cream that you're putting in your coffee if you drink a lot of coffee. Just small, meaningful changes sometimes mean that you're headed more in the right direction. What I've found is when I was heaviest, I felt lethargic a lot. I had more symptoms, and I was more likely to be down on myself. Now that I've lost some weight and I've been playing some tennis to help, you know, help out, you know, with my activity levels that I'm doing, I felt more energy, less. I felt it's still there's it's a habit in my mind to lay down, to almost like want to just lay down and just take it easy and almost take a nap sometimes. But it's only in my mind. I just divert myself away from the couch because I know now that I don't need to have that fallback as much. I don't need to have that fallback as much. Or even if it's just, you know, that sleep at night is very healthy for you. Ben Franklin once said, early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. The only reason I bring that up is that there's so much research that the hours that you sleep before midnight are so important to your health, the hours before midnight. So maybe it's just a matter of going to bed at like 10 o'clock instead of 11:30, going to bed at 10 o'clock, and then you wake up actually feeling a little bit more refreshed and at an earlier time, and maybe you're improving that way. Just small holistic changes. As we know, we need food, but we don't need to eat more than we need. We need, you know, water. We need a lot of things. We need sleep. We need, you know, stress-free environment from time to time. So if you can there's one thing that I know too is that things like there's an app. It's called 10% Happier. It's actually a book that I'm reading now too. It started with a book. It's just called 10% Happier. If all of us could be 10% happier. And here's how they say to do it. One of the things that most people don't really know, and I don't know a lot about it either, but I've started learning about it, is the power of meditation. And there's these podcasts. It's a free app, and it has this professional meditative person focusing on your breathing, and just you sit in a quiet spot for 10 minutes at a time, up to 20 minutes, but just to try to calm your mind down and think to yourself. Because a lot of what happens with mental illness is our thoughts get clouded, they get confused, right. They're here, there, and everywhere. If we can just take some time to think, focus on our breathing, and anyway, it's called 10% Happier. So it might be something that might make a difference, meditation. You know, getting a little more exercise. Remember, it's, you know, 70% diet, 30% exercise, but if just getting going on a walk, it's something that most of us can do, just go on a walk, and just making that extra concerted effort, 20, 30 minutes of some sort of physical exercise every day will go a long way in your overall wellness. So
yeah, I do. I'm really lucky. I do go for a walk every day, just about every day. Yeah, and it's fabulous. And I have a walking buddy. So now I have someone I can talk to.
That's good.
So it kind of kills 2 birds with 1 stone.
Definitely.
The mental and physical at the same time.
And if you hike out in nature, if you even hike at some of these places out in nature, Spruce Run or wherever, sometimes that just clears your mind too and gets you thinking along a little bit of a different plane. So
Priscilla walks once or twice a day, but you walk around a block, which is almost 3 miles, 2.5 miles.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a big block.
That's a big block. Yeah.
But we're in the country, you know,
right,
too.
Right,
so,
right. I've been to your house before.
I go to the gym, you know.
Well, however you do it and however you feel the most comfortable doing it, I think that just a small step in the right direction can lead to Also, you want to don't always accept a doctor's diagnosis or a doctor's recommendation based on that alone. So do some reading and some research on your own and see whether you should, I'm not saying every case, but see whether you would like to get a second opinion. And sometimes second opinions, because one doctor might not know what's going on with you, but yet another doctor, if you find that person,
right,
that's why they say they're practicing medicine. They're practicing. Just like,
right. Exactly.
You know, just lawyers are practicing as well. Yeah. They're practicing law. So, you know, everyone's got, it's sort of a creativity. It's an art and a science, as you know. It's more of a...
Yeah, and you were talking about exercising and stuff like that. Well, this thing that's hanging over my belt right now used to be my chest. So
you look good. You've lost quite a bit, actually,
yeah.
Larry.
Yeah, well, yeah, then it goes up and down and up and down. You know?
I think we all deal with those weight fluctuations, and I just...
But I had to lose a lot of weight when I had my knees replaced. So,
yeah.
You know, I lost well...
In order to get the operation, right? You had to lose weight first.
Yeah.
I'm glad that doctors are really making that a big priority to in hip and knee replacements is not promulgating the problem, helping the person lose the weight so they don't have as much of the stress on their knees and hips,
right,
so that it doesn't become a problem in the future.
Yeah, well, it postponed my knee operation almost 2 years, but
My wife's aunt just got a hip replaced, and she's doing a lot better now after.
Sure.
About 8 months ago, she got her hip replaced, but she's getting around a lot more, and now she's able to walk more and get and be more active.
Right.
And I think that's it's a good thing when doctor says, well, listen, you need to, you know, lose weight, but also, you know, if we do this, then that'll help you going forward too.
Right.
So
we got about 2 minutes left,
okay.
Shay. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you'd like to briefly talk about?
No, the only thing I would say is that for all the people listening out there, we're rounding out Suicide Prevention and Awareness Month, and I don't want people to forget that they're not alone. Don't forget that you're not alone, that you matter. And everyone matters, and you should really think to yourself that if you're in that situation, please reach out.
Right.
Just reach out. And I think that's where I want to leave it. Just if you're in that situation, you find yourself in that situation, a loved one's in that situation, get them the help that they need, because really I want to see people, even if they're not prospering or thriving necessarily right now, they have the ability to turn things around, and it doesn't need to be.
There's hope.
Right.
There's hope. Always hope.
There's hope.
And there's, for family members, just remember that underneath that individual's mental health issues, there's an individual, and you know, they need support. And they need help.
Yep.
And try not to be judgmental.
Right.
Because it could happen to us. See you all next week. Same time, same station. Shay, thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry. As always, it's a pleasure.
Thank you, Shay.
And we'll see you next week. Same time, same station. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters, Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When friends are not enough and you are struggling with depression, anxiety, or addictions, it's time to seek out help. Mental health is one of the most important building blocks to a healthy life. Tune into Counselor's Chat every Wednesday at noon and listen to many topics that pertain to good mental health. With Ruth Altamura Roll, a licensed professional counselor, as your host, you will learn about many facets of good mental health. Let's remove the stigma. Go to www.altarollcounselor.net for more information about my practice. And please follow me on Counselor's Chat on Facebook. Remember, Counselor's Chat every Wednesday at noon. I wish you good mental health.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Hey, Big C here, doing a little practicing for the Hunterdon County Chamber's 16th Annual Golf Classic. We're teeing off a Tuesday, October 3rd at Hawk Point Golf Club. The signature sponsor this year is Hunterdon Healthcare. Besides enjoying a great game of golf, this event is an excellent way for you to promote your business via our sponsorship opportunities, silent auction, and networking luncheon.